I'm Jeremy Loeb with WCQS News. You're about to hear an interview with Cody Henson. He is a Brevard Republican and a new member of the General Assembly. He'll be representing North Carolina's 113th District in the House of Representatives. That district encompasses parts of Henderson, Polk, and Transylvania counties.
Is this your first run for office?
It is, and thanks for having me. This is my first run for office. I never saw myself really getting into politics. I was interested in it, but I never saw myself actually running for office. And with Representative Whitmire retiring, I saw that there was a need for a conservative voice in Western North Carolina. And I could say that until I was blue in the face, but it really didn't mean anything unless I was willing to step up to the plate. So that's how we got started. And as time moved on, we ran a very successful campaign, and we're looking forward to doing great things in Raleigh.
So I guess you had been a supporter of Chris Whitmire before that.
Yeah, Chris and I, we went to the same high school a couple decades apart. He had been on the school board for many years, and he and my father-in-law went to school together. So being real good friends with my father-in-law for many years, just because he was a prominent figure in the community, really involved in youth football, kind of became real good friends with Chris. And then, of course, the more active in the Transylvania County Republican Party I became, the more I got to know Chris. So we've been friends for quite a while.
Yeah, and you were chairman of the Transylvania Young Republicans?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Chris Whitmire retiring, was that sort of just the catalyst for you to jump in? Had you been thinking about it, or were you recruited, or did you just decide, hey, I'm going to do this?
There had been people that had pushed me to run for office before. Everybody had talked about running for county commissioner. I really didn't feel like the timing was right for that. And with Representative Whitmire retiring, it just kind of seemed like it was the place that God was putting me in that position. So after many long hours of talking with my wife, many long hours in prayer, we just felt like it was the right thing to do at the right time. So we threw our hat in the ring, and fortunately, we were successful.
You're a busy guy. You do the call center. You're also a Marine Reserve. Also, do you have to take off time from that to serve in the legislature?
Well, with the Marine Corps Reserve, the timing was actually right. I'd signed a 6-year contract back in January 2011. My entire purpose for getting into the Marine Corps was to deploy overseas. Fortunately, when I came in, we were doing a big drawdown in Iraq and Afghanistan. I never had the opportunity to go serve in Iraq. And with everything happening, my wife and I, we've got a 1-year-old son. And with the drawdown, I felt like it was time to exit the Marine Corps. My contract actually ends tomorrow.
Oh, wow.
So we'll be leaving active service in the Marine Corps. I'll still be in the inactive reserve, which means I could be called up if something bad was to happen, but that really hasn't been an issue for some time for military members. I wanted to put as much focus as possible on serving the people of District 113, and I felt, you know, if I was having to leave for 1 weekend out of the month or 2 weeks out of the summer, it would put a little bit of a hindrance on that. And the people sent me to Raleigh to work for them, and I felt like I could do that best if I was didn't have obligations elsewhere. You know, I've got my family back home, and that's always going to be number one. I didn't want anything else having to get in the way of serving the people in Raleigh.
You're a pretty young guy, aren't you?
I am. I'm 24.
Okay, well, so you signed up right when you turned 18.
Yep, it was a little bit after high school. I spent several hours in several different recruiters' offices. I'd looked into the Navy, I'd looked into the Army, and felt that my family's been in the Air Force and the Army, and always heard great things about the Marine Corps, so I felt like that was the way I should go, and why not join the world's greatest fighting force?
And what was the experience like for you? And did you meet a lot of great people?
I've made so many good friends in the Marine Corps, and I hate to call them friends. They're more like brothers to me. Mm-hmm. Of course, going down to Parris Island for boot camp, that was a little bit of a culture shock. Mm-hmm. You know, I hadn't really been away from home that much, much less 3 months at a time with 25, 30 other strangers and 3 really mean guys just yelling at me from sun up to sundown. But it's something I wouldn't take $1 million for the experience. It taught me a lot about life, you know, how to just be disciplined and do your best in everything you do. And that's something I brought into the campaign with me. My wife can attest to this. I worked from sun up to sundown on the campaign, as well as being a dad, being a husband, as well as supervising a call center. And it was tough, but the Marine Corps taught me how to manage tough situations.
Would you say that you're a different guy than when you got in?
I don't know if different guy is the way to put it. I mean, when I went in, I was an 18-year-old kid fresh out of high school, thought I had everything figured out. My parents will tell you that I definitely walked and talked different, and I talked like a Marine and walked like a Marine, and I didn't necessarily feel that change in me, I guess because I grew into the role of a Marine over 3 months at Parris Island and then another 2 months down at Camp Lejeune for infantry school. So it was a gradual change, I guess. But, you know, my parents, they were back here, so for 5 months they didn't see me, and then I come home and it's a different person to them. But I would say it taught me to grow up. The Marine Corps is all about looking out to the man to the left and right of you. You lose that sense of selfishness, and it's about making sure that the guy next to you makes it home.
Right.
And you're always looking out for him. So you learn that team building set of skills and put the group ahead of yourself, and always push yourself so the other members of the group will push themselves to match your level. We're all the time pushing each other to take it to the next level. I guess in a sense it sent me from a boy to a man, but I tried to stay as normal as possible. I didn't want to turn into a cyborg by no means.
Yeah. So I've looked back at some of the previous stories about you, and I saw one quote where you basically have said that, you know, your opinions can change, but your convictions aren't going to change.
That's right.
And so I guess in that sense, you know, since early on, it sounds like you were sort of driven to more of a public service type role, you know, getting into the Marines right away, staying involved in politics. Does that come from something in your past or anything like that?
I've been very blessed in my life. You know, I've got a great family. I've been blessed with great friends, and I chalk that up to nothing less than the grace of God and just the fact that we live in the greatest country on earth. Being born here in Western North Carolina and in the United States of America and living here my whole life, I've had a lot of good things come my way, and I just chalk that up to the men and women that have gone before me and paved the path, fought for our freedom, and the grace of God. And if I can give back in any sense of the word, I feel like I have that obligation. Like I said, I've got a one-year-old son, and I heard a Ronald Reagan quote back in high school. It was the first time I heard it, and it said, "Freedom's not passed along in the bloodstream. It has to be fought for." And I want to pass that on to my son, so I know I have to fight for it. And any way that I can give back to my community, give back to my country, I want to do that.
Do you think that some of those skills will transfer over that you've learned from the Marines as far as looking out for your fellow man transfer over into the legislature in some ways?
I think a lot of the skills I learned in the Marine Corps will transfer over. There's some. I'm an infantry machine gunner. That skill really doesn't transfer into the civilian world at all. Mm-hmm. But just the discipline, you know, customs and courtesies, just being respectful to people, mm-hmm. That's something that goes a long way, not just in the military role, but in a civilian life, just being respectful to people, but also looking out for people. Mm-hmm. So I absolutely think it'll transfer over into the legislative role I'm taking on, but also just the hard work and dedication. I've never met a more dedicated group than a group of Marines. Whatever they set their sights on doing, we go out and we accomplish that objective. So there's things that I would like to do in Raleigh that, you know, I've got my sights set on, and we're looking to right now at ways to accomplish those goals here in the next year, 2 years.
And what are some of those goals that you've got?
The biggest issue that has come up, I don't want to say recently, but it's kind of coming to the forefront now as school boards are planning budgets for the next school year, mm-hmm. is the class sizes for K through 3. education. There was an error in the bill that was passed that reduced those class sizes. There was a bill that was brought up in one of the special sessions back in December to fix it. But one of those goals is to get those class sizes to where they're small enough to where children aren't fighting for attention with their teachers, but also to where school boards don't have to spend, like Henderson County, they're looking at over $2 million just in bringing on new teachers, bringing in mobile units to bring in more classrooms just for this K through three mandate, which I believe was an honest error. I don't think anybody really saw that it was going to be as big of an issue as it has become, and we're working to fix that. But one of the big things that I talked about in the campaign was returning local control of our school systems back down to local school boards, teachers, and administrators. And that's probably my number two goal going in. Of course, jobs in the economy is number one. That's the one thing you hear about most often when you walk into the grocery stores. Somebody saying, I lost my job. I need another job. We need more jobs here. And that's something I'm looking forward to fighting for in the legislature. I've already been talking with many people that are in leadership positions, some chairman of committees, to what we can do. And, you know, Western North Carolina lost a little bit of its clout with Tom Apodaca retiring and Chris Whitmire retiring. So the senior legislator in Raleigh now is Representative Chuck McGrady, who represents the part of Henderson County that I don't. So fortunately, over the course of the campaign, we were able to build a friendship, and we're already working on some things to strengthen the local economy. One is the acquisition of the Donut Hole in DuPont State Forest. We're looking to put common sense use to state-owned lands with a National Guard training center there in the Donut Hole. Of course, Forest Service, they're going to have a presence there as well. We're talking right now about hopefully getting something for law enforcement, a training center up there, so law enforcement officers from across the state and even across the nation can come here to Western North Carolina and train. And you know as well as I do, once you come to Western North Carolina, you really don't want to leave.
Right.
So this is just some of the things that we're looking at locally to help the economy and also put good use to state-owned lands.
Yeah. Has Chuck McGrady offered you any advice on going in?
He's offered a lot of advice. Just keep your head down and stay focused was probably the best advice he's given me.
Yeah.
You know, of course, with everything that happens in Raleigh as the seat of government, I can see where it'd be easy to get sidetracked on something else that's happening that I really have no control over. And, of course, him being one of the appropriations chairman, he's in a little bit more powerful of a position than I am when it comes to the budget. So we'll be able to work together to get some key things in the budget for right here in Western North Carolina, which I think is great.
Do all the Western lawmakers like meet up? You know, we've got Democrats here in Buncombe County. It seems like Democrats in Western North Carolina seem to be now confined just to Buncombe County. Joe Sam Queen just got defeated by Mike Clampett. Do you guys all sort of get together and try to focus on the issues specific to Western Carolina?
Yeah, we try to keep each other informed of what we're doing. I really try not to look at party labels while I'm down there. Representative Brian Turner, one of the Buncombe County Democrats, he's a great guy. He's a good friend, and we've talked on several occasions. We try to let each other know what our plans are, what we're trying to do, you know, as best as we can. It's a fast-paced environment, and you can't always walk into somebody's office and say, hey, this is what I'm doing, and turn around and leave.
Right.
But we like to know what's happening in our backyards. Representative Clampett over in Bryson City, and then Representative Corbin over in Franklin, they're part of my freshman class. I've got to know them real well, know the issues that are affecting their district, and much of the issues facing Western North Carolina is the same in every district. You know, the main priority is jobs and the economy and education. We all have similar goals into seeing Western North Carolina thrive. It's just how we get there. We have different turns in the road, and that varies even amongst Republicans, much less Republicans and Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
So working together, that's a key objective of mine, because at the end of the day, we all have to come home to Western North Carolina, and we all want to see it thrive once again. And if we can work together find common ground where we can, and we're going to differ on issues. It's mm-hmm. it's no secret. But just finding common ground where we can, working together for that main goal of just seeing Western North Carolina not left out like it was for so many years. You know, I joke around that the mentality in Raleigh has always been that North Carolina ends right around Winston-Salem, and we've got a little dot called Asheville out there somewhere. But there's so much more to Western North Carolina, and we have so much to offer the state of North Carolina. And I think if the representatives and senators from Western North Carolina can all work together, Western North Carolina is going to be the premier place in North Carolina to do business, and that's just going to be great for our local economy.
So much has been made about the divide between urban and rural. So you've also got, you know, the divide between just central North Carolina and the West and mm-hmm. the East, really. Do you have any thoughts, strategies of your own on how the legislature can start to bridge those divides?
It just comes from working together, I believe. You know, building those relationships, rural legislators working with urban legislators. And every now and then, I sometimes find myself falling into them. Like, well, he's one of the urban guys. He's one of the Mecklenburg representatives, and they do the same with us. But at the end of the day, I think we all want to come together and see North Carolina thrive. But they have different needs in their districts as well. Mecklenburg's completely different from Brevard in needs, but at the end of the day, we're all there to represent our people, but we also want to see North Carolina thrive. So it's just opening up that dialogue, talking to each other about, you know, where we're coming from, where they're coming from, and finding that common ground where we can work together. I don't think that there is a mentality that, you know, everything just needs to go to the urban areas, that's where everything's thriving, but I think in some ways, that's kind of the area North Carolina's moving towards.
Right, right.
So just us rural legislators coming together and working with urban legislators, I think that's going to open up vast opportunities for us to do things in both areas of North Carolina.
Yeah.
I don't want to see the urban areas slow down at all, because that hurts the North Carolina economy. But I do want to see some of the economic gains our urban areas have seen come right here into Western North Carolina and even the eastern part of the state.
Yeah. So I guess you weren't there yet, obviously. But what did you think of what happened during the special session regarding House Bill 2? Because that kind of encapsulates that differing values almost between some of the urban legislators and some of the rural legislators. Was there just like a breakdown of trust? And what's the kind of thing that you think lawmakers might be able to do regarding HB2 and addressing that issue?
I have no idea where House Bill 2 is going. I personally think it needs to stay on the books. But my seatmate, who's a Republican from Charlotte, he's a freshman, and we've had conversations about this, and this is an area where he and I differ, just because he sees what it's doing in urban North Carolina right there in downtown Charlotte. As far as where House Bill 2 went in the special session, I think a lot of the trust was lost when it came to fruition that Charlotte had only repealed part of the ordinance.
Right.
I was not in any meetings with any legislators, Republican or Democrat, but I feel like that's where some of the trust was lost.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that it was an all or nothing deal to some senators, because the House never took up a bill. They came in and talked for a little while in caucus meetings, and then they got out of town.
Yeah.
But with the Senate, there was a bill on the table that put a moratorium on municipalities putting forth a similar ordinance to Charlotte. And I think that was put into place because there were several city council, town council members across the state saying, as soon as House Bill 2 is gone, we're putting another ordinance on the books in our city.
Mm-hmm.
There was a Durham city councilman that had tweeted that earlier that day. So I think they wanted the cooling off period to reassess the situation, try to find a compromise so we weren't going back through a similar situation.
Yeah.
Now that's just speculation on my part, but that's the way I took it. And as far as where the breakdown was and why something was not moved forward, I don't know. I can't really answer that because I wasn't there. But if I was to speculate, I would say that there was just a trust issue.
Yeah.
I mean, House Bill 2 has been a contentious issue for almost a year now.
Yeah.
It's caused a lot of heartache in the legislature as well as across the state. But I personally think it's a common sense bill. Men don't belong in women's restrooms, and I think there's just not really been that dialogue on either side.
So, you know, you describe yourself as a conservative Christian and someone who won't compromise on those values. So how does the conversation occur, you know, when you've got a bill? It's so tricky because you've got a bill that you're saying this is needed, but on the other hand, you know that there is harm being done also economically. So how do those two things reconcile?
Well, I personally don't think you can put a price tag on keeping women and children safe in the most private of settings. I feel that with the ACC and the NCAA and the NBA pulling games out of here, I feel that was a political stunt. You know, all the big-time artists that are pulling concerts from the state, you know, they're trying to send a political message, and I personally don't think that Hollywood or anybody else should be trying to play politics in the state of North Carolina. That's not their job. Now, I understand that they have a set of convictions, too, and I can certainly understand that. I'll sit down and talk with anybody, just like Representative Doolin. He knew that I did not agree with him on the issue, but we still sat down and had a meaningful conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And he brought his side to the table and told me where he was coming from, and I told him where I was coming from, and he understands that.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't want me to compromise on my values and the values that the people of District 113 elected me for.
Yeah. Was it productive? Like, was it sort of like expressing your views and then him expressing his, but was there an area where you guys were finding solution?
We never really brought up a solution.
Sure.
We were down for one of our freshman orientation meetings,
mm-hmm.
and we had actually gone out to dinner, and we were just discussing this over, I think, a loaf of bread at the restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there can be some common ground there. I like to think that there's common ground on any issue that's going to come before the General Assembly, and it's just being willing to talk to people who have differing opinions. As far as the bathroom portion on the bill, I feel like that's spot on, and that's something that I can't in good conscience compromise on. Now, there are other aspects of the bill that I feel there's some wiggle room on, and you know, we can, as Republicans, can give and take on some things. But it's really, we're just going to have to sit down and actually discuss things.
Do you think that the legislature has failed in any way in that respect, as far as discussing with each other, speaking as an observer, I guess?
I feel like in any type of business or political environment, there's always some type of breakdown in communication. I mean, there are times when things are so contentious over hot-button issues that you don't want to hear the other side because you know what they're going to say, and the kind of the mentality is well, they're not going to change their mind, I'm not going to change my mind. And I feel like that's where I'm going to play a good role, is just actually talking to people. You know, we may not agree at the end of the day and nothing may change, but at least we had that conversation.
Right, right.
And I feel like, okay, we didn't go anywhere on this issue.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be other issues down the road that you're going to need my help on, or I'm going to need your help on, and or something that we may just completely agree on, but because way back here we got into it, we can't talk about it now.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's just communication.
And you think constituents, definitely, that's what they expect when they send lawmakers to Raleigh. They expect that they're going there to work together, I assume.
I know personally, just well, let's take Congress, for example. I don't want there to be gridlock in Congress, because when there's gridlock in Congress, nothing gets done.
Right.
Do I want my representatives voting against my values and my beliefs? Absolutely not. But I do think that my representatives should be at least trying to reach across the aisle on some issues. And we're not going to agree on everything. But there are things that we can agree on, things that we can work together and compromise on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's I'm not going to go to Raleigh and ask anybody to compromise on their values,
mm-hmm.
but work with me on some things where we can actually move North Carolina forward.
Yeah,
I'll work with somebody else on another issue that you don't agree with me on. So I think it's a great thing to communicate, and I think we're going to be able to get a lot more done if we can communicate. And I think you'll see a lot more communication amongst both parties in Raleigh this coming session.
And you talked about education earlier on, and it looks like that's going to be a big focus for you. You had talked about, I think on your campaign website, about how your experience in the public schools kind of shaped and formed you, and mm-hmm. how you wanted to sort of give back. I thought it was also interesting, you expressed a little bit of skepticism towards the voucher program. What do you think about that?
Well, I personally feel that if a parent chooses to send their child to a private school, that they should front the bill for that. I feel that, you know, you have a great public education system that is offered to you. If you don't want to send your child or children to the public education system, it should be on you to find other means to educate your child. I feel the state's number one obligation is to public education. And I feel that because I come from a rural public school. My grandmother taught in the rural public school system for many years. So my heart lies with public education, and I feel that there's so much that we can do to prepare the future generations for what lies ahead. And the more emphasis we can, not really emphasis, but the more we can put into public education, the more we're going to get out of it. I have no problem with parents looking for alternatives to public school. There's a Christian Academy in Brevard, Anchor Baptist. I think they're great, and I love everybody down there. If people in my district want to send their children to Anchor to go to school, I think that's great. But I don't feel that taxpayers should be fronting that bill for them.
Right.
Or even part of the bill, because the voucher they get is not going to cover all of the tuition for a private school.
Right. So you're worried that it's expanding?
I'll push back on vouchers, but there's a lot of people down in Raleigh that agree with it. But it's mm-hmm. just having that conversation, explaining to them, you know, I don't have many private schools in my district. Mm-hmm. A lot of the students in my district go to a public school. So I have to fight for public education because it's good for my district, but it's also something I believe in. I believe in our public education system.
And you think you'll be able to get some clout in Raleigh to be able to get your voice heard as far as on things like the budget, as far as teacher pay?
Yeah, no, I walk into a room and everybody stops and looks because I'm the youngest member of the General Assembly this year. Mm-hmm. So just getting their attention is something for a freshman. But I've had several conversations with Speaker Tim Moore, the House Rules Chair David Lewis, many of the committee chairs, just expressing my goals and how I can help them and how they can help me on issues that I'm hoping to pursue, that they're hoping to pursue. Once again, it's just building that communication, building those relationships, I think has been a real helpful tool for me. I've been in Raleigh almost every week since the election.
I see.
Meeting with people or for freshman orientation or caucus meetings, things of that nature. And just being able to talk to them, I think is – I don't want to toot my own horn by no means, but I feel like they know I'm there now because they see the face and they know the name, and it's easier just to walk up to them and talk to them when you know somebody.
Mm-hmm,
so that was kind of my goal with the first few trips to Raleigh coming in, and you know, there's still people I need to speak with and that I want to speak with, and we're working on getting those things scheduled right now. So of course, as a freshman, you're towards the back of the house and you don't get to chair any committees, but just being a vocal voice there that people can actually hear and being courteous to them. I mean, mm-hmm. we may disagree, but it doesn't mean that I have to be mean to them or they have to be mean to me. Just say, well, I don't agree with you on this. Let me tell you why, and then we'll move on. But it's just having that communication
And I appreciate the fact that you consider talking to the press part of the job too. That's great.
Well, you guys relay our message. So.
Your family seems really on board. Were they really excited? And they seemed to help out during the campaign.
Oh, they were thrilled. You know, from my grandparents keeping our son while we were out working the polls on election day or during early voting, my mom would actually take her lunch break during early voting and go work the polls in Henderson County. So instead of eating lunch, she would go out and work for me at the polls, which I think is great. And, you know, my family was incredibly supportive from the moment I sat down and told them what we were thinking about doing and talking with them about it. They were nothing but supportive. And they went above and beyond my expectations because I've got two younger sisters who are still in school playing sports year-round. You know, they've got a lot on their hands as it is with kids that are still living with them.
Yeah.
But they would stop whatever they were doing if they could, and they would come to events. They would help me host events. It was just an incredible showing of support. And the amount of work that they put in, I'm pretty sure they probably outworked me. But it was just incredible. And then my wife, she would leave one real estate showing and go to a campaign event and speak on my behalf. Or if I was gone with the Marine Corps that weekend, she was touring the district speaking on my behalf. So it was just an amazing amount of support from my family, and I couldn't be more grateful.
Yeah, and I've heard from other lawmakers, you know, Brian and Chuck, you've both mentioned, just talk about how grueling the session can be, especially this one's going to be really long. Do you have, you know, strategy for how to deal with that? Are you going to be driving to Raleigh and back home, and are you going to stay in Raleigh sometimes? Or
I'll stay in Raleigh throughout the week.
Yeah.
Sessions will typically begin on Monday evenings, so I'll leave sometime on Monday, drive down, and then come back when the session ends that week. Mm-hmm. Be here for my family, be here for my constituents, and then we'll do it all over again. And my family, they'll make some trips down. I really wanted my wife to focus on a real estate career. She's just getting started in that. But she's already told her boss that at least once a month she'll be down in Raleigh with me. So I think it'll be great to have my wife and kid there with me. Mm-hmm. I won't miss them too much that week.
Oh, that's good.
So it's going to be great. And just the amount of support that I have from my family in that respect, you know, they're willing to make sure that my wife and my son are taken care of while I'm in Raleigh.
Yeah.
On the trips that they don't make with me. And that's just incredible and really humbling for me to know that I have that here. I have that support system here. You know, I'll miss them like crazy while I'm in Raleigh, but you know, they understand why I'm there. Mm-hmm. And once the session ends, we'll be back here handling constituent issues and catching up on family time.
Yeah, I'm sure it kind of never really ends. Yeah. How about the call center? Are you still going to be able to work there?
I'll be working there on a part-time basis. I'll mm-hmm. be doing that remotely, just sending emails on behalf of the company.
Yeah.
And they've been great since day one as well, just working with me, making sure I had the time off to go do campaign events or even take off and go to Raleigh for a few days at a time. They've been incredible to work for and with, and I'm grateful that they're allowing me to stay there mm-hmm. part-time and keep my foot in the door, because I don't plan on being a legislator forever.
Right.
Like I said, my goal is to never get into politics, so I'll still have something there when all this is said and done.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, that's great. It's probably a really touchy subject, especially for a freshman legislator, but is there any effort, do you think, that there might be to raise the pay for lawmakers? You know, it's probably going to be really tough to be there. Luckily, your wife works and you have the part-time job. What do you think?
I personally think that the pay for legislators is what keeps a lot of people from attempting to serve in the state house or state senate. I personally felt that as an outsider looking in, thinking about running, you know, you go on the General Assembly's website and you look and everybody's either a business owner, they're retired, or something of that nature, where they're able to just pick up and leave for months on end.
Yeah.
And I feel the pay is what keeps people from actually seriously considering running for the state house. Will the pay change? I don't think any legislator wants to vote themselves a pay raise by no
right,
means.
Right.
I know there's been a push in recent years to kind of raise that the wages a little bit, but I don't know if it'll ever actually come to fruition. It is a part-time job, and I say that loosely because a legislator's work never stops. There's always something to be working on. I'm looking most forward to working on constituent issues, to be honest. And those come in year round. It's not just while you're in session.
Yeah.
Before the session even started, I was getting emails. I've been happy to start working on some of those. But as far as the pay raise goes, I don't know if it'll come up this year.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. I would like to see it to where you know, the common working man would be able to go serve his district, serve his constituents.
Yeah, because you'll be very unique there with your age and background. So you may be able to be a key voice for that, I guess, possibly.
Yeah, I've always kind of just seen myself as the average Joe on the street. You know, I live a very average life up until about a year ago when I threw my name in to run for office.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think that can sometimes be a tendency for why politicians in general just forget what it's like to be an average person.
Right.
Someone who goes and punches a time clock, works 40-plus hours a week, comes home, raises a family, does sporting events on the weekends with their kids and do it all again on Monday morning. I feel like sometimes there's a disconnect there. So I feel like that's where I'm going to be able to play a very important role is just, I guess, bringing people back down to earth and say, you got to think of the average working man, you know, what they're facing, what their families are facing, because not everybody is fortunate enough to be able to run a business or be a hotshot trial lawyer in a big city. And I think it's great that we have several people who work for a living in Raleigh now. Some of the freshman class, they work for a living. They've put their lives on hold to come down there and serve the people of their district in the state of North Carolina, and I think that's great. So I think there's going to be a little bit of a mentality change coming into Raleigh this year just as far as actually helping the average person.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Well, Representative Henson, we've talked for nearly 45 minutes now. Is there anything that we didn't get to that you wanted to discuss?
No, I think we covered it. I appreciate you having me on. And anytime that you would like to sit down and talk with me, we'll be more than happy to fit that into the schedule and come over here just to let the people know what's happening.
All right. Well, great.
Raleigh.
I appreciate that. All right. Well, thanks for coming in.
All right. Thank you.